The Money Show. Personal finance.
Warren Ingram from Galileo Capital with personal finance. Huge interest in tonight's topic. Lots of messages asking me what time we're talking about Bitcoin. Cindy Paluta from the Eyewitness News team, who does sport. She goes, my mom wants to know. I know it's you, Cindy. I know it's you. It's your mother-in-law.
Her mother-in-law.
Oh, yeah, her mother-in-law, please. Only her mother-in-law's got some imagination, Cindy. I hope you're sitting together listening to the wireless. I'm talking about Bitcoin. It's becoming a subject of school car park discussions. People are looking to make money quickly. They've got serious FOMO. Fear of missing out. They didn't get in early. The thing has been flying. It's been getting to record territory day after day before collapsing and pulling back and causing panic. Warren Ingram from Galileo Capital, this is your ideal investment vehicle. But I don't think I read about it in your book, How to Make a First Million.
you might have read about bubbles and troubles, and I think this might fall into that category as opposed to my preferred investment vehicle.
Right.
What's interesting, just looking at it, I tried to get an idea of the growth of the value of Bitcoin, and so, you know, from the 1st of January last year, so 1 Jan 2016, to now, it's up about 530%, which is astonishing. I mean, you know, that's a really good good ride on your investment if you've made it. Well done. And if you've been buying it recently, as you say, and I went to look at January this year, up about 180%. So that's an astonishing return. I mean, just incredible. And if we'd all taken all our pensions and sold all our houses and put all our money in there, we could have, you know, it could have gone up five times. So what's interesting to me and why I wanted to talk about it tonight was the number of emails and calls I'm getting. Right up until I heard about it being discussed when I was having my haircut. And I've learned that the hairdressing salon is quite possibly the most dangerous place in the world for investments. And then I knew...
Maybe you should just change hairdressers. Have you considered that?
Well. What's interesting is my hairdresser's read my books. So she doesn't. She just listens and right. Smiles and then you listen around and it's when it hits the hair salon. I know it's time. It's happened a few times in the past and it's a surefire indicator. If there's a predictor in the world. Yeah. Of a bubble, it's the hairdressing salon.
But the thing that the similar story today, I was talking to a colleague who was saying, oh, what time are you talking about Bitcoin? Because I really want to listen because everybody at the school car park is talking about Bitcoins. And that to me is a similar indicator.
I agree. And so I thought before we dive into just Bitcoin specifically, we need to give it a bit of a context. What, you know, am I just, you know, too old and too jaded? And you know, this is the next big thing, and I'm just missing the boat, which is what I assume your Twitter line is gonna tell you.
No, that's what I'm thinking actually. I don't need Twitter to tell me that. That's exactly what I'm thinking.
But so I went back and I thought, it's one of my pet hobbies is to understand humans, psychology and investment bubbles. And it's not a new phenomenon. We can go right back, about 380 years to look at the first one where we started to get some information on bubbles. And this one, came up around the phenomenon that is tulip bubbles, tulip bulbs. So these are the flowers, nothing fancy. These are tulips. They grow in the Netherlands, and there was a point in time when tulips, the price of a tulip bulb was going up 200% in a month. So just to think about that. So fortune was made and many fortunes were made in an extremely short period of time, probably 3 or 4 years, where tulips became this big, the next big thing. This was the thing that could just never go down again. It was going to go up in value forever because they were rare. People wanted them all over the place. And
I mean, the thing about the tulip bubble, which was really interesting, is that there was just so much hype around these bulbs, tulip bulbs. Some were more rare than others, and so commanded a higher price. And there was a point, as this bubble was about to burst, where one tulip bubble would be the price of a house. I mean, that's how seriously these otherwise very intelligent people, the Dutch who were commanding the high seas, who were commanding global trade, were falling for a scam that I don't think was it ever intended as a scam. It was just hype and excitement.
It was exactly that. It was hype and excitement, and probably they probably didn't have hairdressers in those days. They had something else, and that's what happened. I think it's quite nice to stay on the sort of the fashion theme, because I think the next one is then very very near to South Africans' hearts, and this took place in the 1890s up to 1914, the beginning of World War One, and that was the ostrich feather boom. And if you've ever driven around the Karoo, around Oudtshoorn area, you'll often see the most beautiful farmhouses, really magnificent palaces built there. And almost all of those were built in this time. The ostrich feather barons would, and there was a point in time where the demand for those white ostrich feathers that most of us now know as feather dusters, those were so rare. And such demand that a kilogram of those white feathers that were used then in hats in overseas, a kilogram of feathers was worth more than a kilogram of gold. And gold's always been valuable. That has been a store of value. World War One arrives, fashions change, and suddenly we use those feathers for feather dusters. We use them to clean our houses, not for and we would have loved that kilogram of gold, 1915. As a context, and that was a purely a fashion driven thing. And again, I mean, I think we're starting to see a trend here, is that there's not a deep underlying fundamental valuation to a tulip bulb or an ostrich feather. It's just something that gets driven up by the whims of people. They get themselves into the state of excitement, and as you said, that fear of missing out kicks in. You've missed the first 200-300% of a rise in value. You've got to jump in. And get on the bandwagon before you really miss out.
That is the trouble with bubbles. So, I mean, you've given us two great examples. The tulip mania, which caused fortunes to be made and lost. The ostrich feather bubble, and South Africa was connected to that, which caused fortunes to be made and lost. We want to talk about Bitcoin this evening, which if you had bought Bitcoin at the beginning of 2016, the money that you would have spent on those Bitcoin would be up 530%. Just this year alone, Bitcoin is 180% more expensive. I don't want to say more valuable, but certainly more expensive than it was on the 1st of January. Now, if I was to ask you this question at the beginning of last year, Warren Ingram, you would have used exactly the same examples, and you would have told me exactly the same stories about what a terrible idea this Bitcoin thing is. Yet 18 months later, I would have been 530% richer on the paltry sum of money that I could have put into it, and you wouldn't have been.
Correct. And I think that the difference would be two differences. One is in January last year, I wasn't hearing this talk about Bitcoin in the hair salon yet. So I knew
that's when you slid a pony. You weren't going to the hairdresser because you slid your ponytail. Yeah.
So I knew for certainty that the mania hadn't arrived yet. And it was more being spoken about by the early adopters, in both in the investment world and in the tech world, as opposed to everybody, And so I think that was one big difference, but you're quite right. People would have put money in there, and they would have made a lot of money. The question is, what's going to drive it? What's the fundamental value driver for that Bitcoin to go up in value
here? I want to pause there because I really want to get into that detail in just a moment. Warren Ingram from Galileo Capital. If you are an investor in Bitcoin, if you've bought a Bitcoin, or you've bought a clutch of Bitcoins, or a fistful of Bitcoins, or whatever the collective noun is for Bitcoins, I would love to hear from you. Are you a devotee? Are you dedicated? Are you somebody who doesn't want to let them go one little bit, and you're feeling terribly clever and terribly satisfied, and you want to tell Warren Ingram and I not to be fuddy-duddies and history scholars, and to get with the 21st century? I would love to hear from you on 011-883-0702-021-446-0567 as the lines light up.
Cape Talk, The Money Show. Call Bruce on 021-446-0567.
Says somebody on the SMS line, Bruce, when this bubble bursts, it's going to be your fault because you answered the do you pay tax on it. The minute you said no, everyone picked up their ears. I didn't say nobody pays tax on it, but I don't know the answer. Brian Warren is displaying a second sign of grief. It's anger. He's angry that Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are going to swallow his industry. I don't do Bitcoin, but trade cryptocurrency called Ethereum, says somebody else. Bruce is a high today making... No, don't know what that one's about. And then what is the other one? It's an absolute classic that has come through on the Cape Talk line. I disagree with the examples you've used. They were not driven by scarcity. Both gold and Bitcoin have a scarcity factor built in and behind them, says Andre. David in Newlands, you have bought Ethereum, which is another cryptocurrency, right?
That's correct, Bruce. I have.
Tell me about
it. There's a fundamental... No, I bought Bitcoin specifically for the purpose of buying Ethereum because Bitcoin is effectively a store of value, and I'd liken that to a normal currency. But using the analogy that your guest used, Ethereum has extra or additional facilities. For example, you can use Ethereum to underpin something called a smart contract, and that's becoming more... prevalent in the industry at the moment. And as a result, Ethereum not only has value as a store of value, as a currency would, but it also has value as a transactional mechanism. As a result, I think it's got better potential to grow. And it's underpinned by an additional set of values.
Now, what underpins the value of Bitcoin or Ethereum in this particular case? What gives it its value? In the olden days, there was gold offset, and you could go to the bank and demand a rand's worth of gold if you wanted to. And then Richard Nixon introduced fiat currencies, and currencies became floating, and they had no fundamental value. And that is one of the issues that proponents of Ethereum and proponents of Bitcoin put forward and say, well, that's precisely why these digital currencies are so good, because you can limit their supply and governments can't print buckets of the things.
That's very true, but at the same time, the value of any currency comes about as a result of its difficulty to obtain it. Same thing can be said of diamonds. But if you consider the difficulty in obtaining either Ethereum, Bitcoin, or any one of the other cryptocurrencies, which is innately built into the method in which they are mined, it's an algorithmic process that requires a lot of effort. And they are finite at this point. So you're in a situation where in order to obtain them and use them, you have to have gone through a mining process, which you can do, but it takes a long time and it's expensive. And every time somebody mines a Bitcoin, effectively the other Bitcoins become more valuable because the rarity increases.
David in Newlands, thank you. Warren Ingram, defend yourself.
I don't know if he's helping me or hurting me. If I listen to it, so I mean, I think this is not a knock of cryptocurrencies. I think they definitely are going to dramatically change the way the whole. I think many industries work, and I think we're right at the start of that. So I think so one or two of the comments are probably not valid. I certainly think it's going to change. For example, you know, when we transfer rands into dollars, it takes, you know, blooming nearly a week. And with crypto, with the cryptocurrency technology or the blockchain technology, I guess, you know, that can happen, you know, literally at the speed of light. And so that to me is fundamental, and lots of things are going to change with that. So it's not that. This is about a straight investment fad and listening to the profits. Sounds to me like of Bitcoin, the language.
The profits, PH, not profits, FITS, no.
No, the profits, as in the ones that would sell a religious argument. Yes. Because at some point, you know, they develop a level of faith that's strong in something like this.
Okay, well, I mean, here's one. Ari, you believe in Bitcoin. I mean, that's quite religious.
Yes, so we strongly believe in Bitcoin. My partners and I that met at university, I'm starting my postgraduate in accountancy, got into this about a year ago exactly. We rode the wave, and then we saw opportunity to bring in the hardware into South Africa. So we focus now solely on supplying hardware to mine Bitcoins or to mine any cryptocurrency.
That's fine. Well, I can understand if you supply hardware to go to a mine to dig a hole in the ground and extract gold. That's hardware I can visualize. Okay. What visualize?
Yes, 100%.
Create a visual image for me of the hardware you supply.
So the hardware is a specialized computer that uses GPUs, graphic cards, that sell algorithms that you get allocated to a specific pool that you do your research on, with different difficulty levels going through different phases within the Bitcoin cycle, such as halving blocks every 4 years, which we just went through last year. And the whole underlying blockchain technology verifies the transactions using these miners. If the miners fail, there is no digital currency. They verify transactions, and you get paid out in cryptocurrencies to run this hardware.
Ari, you sound like an intelligent guy. You sound like a guy who knows what he's doing. Warren Ingram, there is a big group of people who are investing traditional money, I'm going to call it that, into something that makes money that you and I are struggling to comprehend. Why is it that it's bugging you so much from an investment perspective? Not the technology that is going to change the world, the blockchain technology that makes it possible to move money across borders and that's freaking governments out, but the hype and the excitement around people who will pay top dollar today for a Bitcoin because they heard it at the hairdressers.
I mean, I think the point there is that there's no fundamental research. So we've had two different people, I think it's from the sounds of them, very intelligent, explaining it to us.
Yeah.
And in truth, you know, if we were sitting around having a coffee, we'd still say to ourselves, actually, we don't really understand exactly how this thing works. And so if we don't understand 100% how it works, that means we don't understand 100% the risks and the potential downfalls. And I guess the believers will tell us that there's no potential downfalls. This is the next big thing. It's here to stay. And to me, that's always dangerous because it's operating. And I'm not saying in a black box because they have attempted transparency, but it is extremely complex. And the point now is you take, and what will happen now is people will get sucked in by this 530% story, and they'll start committing not play money, but significant chunks of their savings, their life savings, to something, not understanding it fully. And if this bubble bursts, and I'll give the benefit of the doubt to say if as opposed to when, which is what I believe, the people at the end of this are the ones that are really going to hurt, and it'll be the people that were dragged in right at the end, committing huge parts of their life savings, and they're the ones that really suffer in this deal. So to me, that's the thing we need to be talking about here. Is yes, all good and well. If you want to take a punt, please do your homework and try and go to understand this bit better than I can, and then take a tiny view. Now, that's great, and if you have the big ride, that's wonderful. But to me, it's a bit like trying to ride a tiger. You know, it's all good and well while you're on the tiger, but when you fall off, you're really going to get hurt.
I was speaking to somebody I respect very much yesterday who said to me, "Oh, I got my bitcoins at $60." So I said, "What are you going to tell me? You bought 1,000? Because if you bought 1,000, what on earth are you still doing working?" And he said, "No, I got 6 or 5, I think." and he's feeling very smug and very proud of themselves because they've made a great deal of money. But again, speaking to some people in the Bitcoin trade and saying, okay, you know, what do you get your salary paid in? And they go, rands or dollars. And you know, there is still so much to prove, but maybe this is the next big thing, Warren. And we simply, you and I are not doing it justice.
No, I think quite the opposite. I mean, I think
Excellent.
We need to do justice to people who are going to get caught with this and tell them to exercise extreme caution.
Exercise caution. He's not saying don't do it. He's saying do it, but do it at a small scale. Be very cautious when you do it.
And go and do an incredible amount of reading on this. Really go and spend more time on this than you would spend on deciding what car to buy, what fridge to buy, what appliance to buy, what phone to buy. Go and do 4 times more reading than that.
In your experience, I mean, and this would be anecdotal, how much time do people do relatively when it comes to buying a car or buying the latest phone versus reading the documentation that comes with a unit trust?
I think people spend a lot more time deciding on what, if they still do cell phone contracts, what cell phone contract to buy, and what phone to buy, and certainly on cars than they'll ever do on investments, and probably. If I look at the average investor, they might have done about 3 pages of reading per unit trust that they've bought.
Yeah,
that'll be the sum total.
We're not telling you what to do, but we are. We're saying be careful. I think that's
extremely careful.
Extremely careful. Buyer beware.
This is lots of adjectives here. You have to be really careful with this.
There we go. Warren Ingram from Galileo Capital. Thank you very much indeed. Coming in. Sounding the warning on Bitcoin. But if he'd sounded the warning a year ago, you would think he's an idiot because it is up 500%. 12 months from now, when we revisit this, because I'm putting it into my diary, we'll have another chat, Warren Ingram, if you're up for it. He is there. I know he's there.
Hi. Sorry. Yes.
12 months from now, we'll have another chat and we'll see where it's gone.
I agree.
Excellent. He's up for it. Warren Ingram from Galileo Capital.